to the CDG Bizcast. I'm your host, Christian Gonzalez, co-owner of Creativity Design Group, a digital marketing firm in Houston, Texas. Today, we are going to discuss the ongoing legal troubles of local hotspot Trill Burgers, owned by Houston rapper Bun B and his associates, and how business owners can learn how to choose wisely and be more cautious when it comes to choosing business partners, as well as how to ensure there is honesty amongst the other partners. Joining me today is Chef Michael Brown, owner of Jam Burritos. Welcome back to BizCast, Michael. It's a pleasure to have you.
Christian, it's always good to join you on this wonderful podcast. Thanks for having me.
And yes, welcome back again. Now, before we begin today's episode, I just want to make the disclaimer that the information provided in this episode is for educational purposes only, as we are not attorneys, and everything that we discuss is not to be taken as legal advice. Let's give a rundown of what is going on over at Trill Burgers for those who don't know, who are not even familiar with Trill Burgers. Trill Burgers was founded by Houston rapper Bun B, Nicholas Scherfield, chef and restaurateur Andy Nguyen, and brother and sister duo Benson and Patsy Vivarez. Andy Nguyen invented the burger in 2021 when the Vivarez were experimenting with new concepts for their menu at their other restaurant, Sticky's Chicken, which is currently out of business. Trill Burgers made its debut as a pop-up shop at the 2022 Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, and it became hotly popular. In fact, because Trill was only a pop-up shop at the time appearing at certain events like this, it was the only way you can get a Trill Burger. The Houston Rodeo, for example, only runs for 3 weeks in March, so getting a Trill Burger was impossible throughout the rest of the year unless they popped up at another event. Because demand for the burger was hot, Trill was able to open its first brick-and-mortar location in 2023 in a former James Coney Island restaurant on Richmond Avenue in South Shepherd, the Montrose area. Due to the popularity of Bun B to the Houston area, he became the face of the concept. Trill Burgers has seen great success upon its launch, even getting patronized by several famous faces such as Mike Tyson. The legal troubles just began for the Vivarez duo when Patsy admitted in a text message exchange with Andy Nguyen to using $45,000 of proceeds from the 2022 rodeo to pay for expenses related to Sticky's Chicken. Apparently, Sticky's was in dire straits and had to make their rent payment or face eviction, so she took it upon herself to use Trill's money without authorization from other partners to make this payment. Initially, the Vivarez were in charge of handling financial matters for Trill, but their transparency over how the funds were being handled began to fade over time. Bun B and other partners barely make this shocking discovery due to her admission of the theft in the text message exchange with Nguyen. Bun B, Nguyen, and Scherfield are now suing the Vivarez's for $250,000, which is way more than what they stole, and the Vivarez's were served with a notice made by the other partners to end their relationship between them and Trill, and this would require the Vivarez's to surrender their ownership stakes back to the other parties and full repayment of the stolen funds. The Vivarez's have not responded and instead are countersuing the other parties, claiming that they created the Trill Burger recipe and Bun B was only made the face of the brand due to his popularity. They claim that he hoodwinked them out of the recipe and is attempting to steal it from them. Additionally, the Vivarez's feel that they are hotly being forced out of the partnership unfairly, despite evidence showing Patsy was responsible for misappropriating company funds. The attorney representing the other three owners say that the Vivarez's are incorrect about inventing the recipe and that Andy Nguyen is the real inventor. They claim in their words that they started the party and Bun B was just invited. This entire situation is getting extremely messy and the other partners are extremely disgusted with the Vivarez's, who in my opinion should have never used Trill funds to cover expenses related to a venture that Trill had no involvement to begin with. Michael, this is a restaurant industry related ordeal, and I just want to get your professional opinion on what is going on here to help other business owners avoid this from happening to themselves. My first question, before going into business with other people, regardless of what industry you're in, how should you vet your potential new partners before starting a venture?
Well, first of all, don't do it. Don't make your business depend on going into business with other people. It's like a marriage, but you know, I say that in jest, but you know, sometimes you don't have a choice or it makes sense. But many of my predecessors, mentors, and so forth have said things to me in regards to going into business with other people that it's like a marriage and you don't take that marriage lightly. What do? You get a marriage license that binds you two together legally. But Let me just say, I've had personal experience with bad partnerships, and I know mentors of mine that have had bad partnerships. And for example, Chef Austin Leslie of Chez Helene, a restaurant that in the 80s was 50 years young and very popular with the New Orleans Saints. Chef Austin Leslie at that time was around 76 years old. He inherited it from his aunt, Helen. And when I went to his restaurant, you could see all of these wonderful pictures of the New Orleans Saints on his walls. He was an icon. Well, about 4 or 5 years later, he entered into an agreement with some people that wanted to franchise his name. And unfortunately, they stole all of his money. After Katrina, they said he passed away with very little money at all. That's a sad state of affairs. Also, we have to remember that 50% of the restaurant businesses fail within the first year. And it's not always because their food is bad or even their service is bad. There's a lot of politics that go behind running restaurants if you're in partnerships. There's politics that go if you're not in a partnership, but you might as well say your landlord is your partner. There's politics there as well. That was my story. But just to answer the question about how should you vet a partner, the first thing you should, in my opinion, do is to try to avoid going into partnership with someone else, sometimes even with family members. And then if you are going to go into a partnership with someone, make sure that they bring certain elements and qualities to the partnership that will enhance the business. So when you're designing a business, you're writing a business plan, you know, you need a CEO, you need a chief financial officer, you want HR department, you want all of the various elements that it takes to run a corporation. And in my 46 years in the industry, I'm just now learning that it's not about, well, it is important to have great food and it is important to have great service, but most of the people that I've seen be really successful were good at managing the business. And sometimes when we get into the restaurant business, we say, oh, wow, you know, they keep talking about how great my chicken wings are. And all I got to do is open up a stand or open up a building and just sell my chicken wings and everything's going to be great. Well, the restaurant business is a business of pennies, not dollars. You know, if you're doing well, you're probably bringing home 15 cents on the dollar. So there's a lot that you have to do to make it successful and then, you know, feed the various hands that need to get paid, from your vendors, from your landlord, from your staff to the government. Everybody has a hand in the pot. So when you get multiple partners involved in that, it's really important that each one understands that what their roles are. And they should be very, very proficient at what they do. For example, we're opening up John Burrito's Cajun Grill. Now, my partner is my wife, who I've known and been married to for 38 years and 40 years knowing her. And I know her skill set. I know she's really good at marketing and public relations. And so henceforth, that's where her name appears on our organizational chart. I trust her. Okay. But when you're starting to talk about different partners, you really have to take into consideration that these are different entities trying to come together. So you have to be on the same, you know, everybody has to be on the same page and working towards the same goal. The first thing I would do, make sure that I know this person well enough, make sure that I trust this person. But even more importantly, everything, each partner should have their own legal team. So you come to the table with strength because you're not sharing the same attorney and hoping for the best. So, and that should not be a threatening concern. It should be what you would expect from a partner. They have an attorney, you have an attorney. Because in order to work towards being on the same page, there's a lot of discussion that has to go on. What the menu is going to be like, how we're going to hire the staff, what's the marketing going to look like. And everybody has different opinions. But if you have a legal structure where opinions can be heard, you have operating agreements, you know, who's going to do what, then you get into a position where you're not intimidated because you know all of these things can be worked out over time. But when the lines are blurred, then you're in a situation where when something happens, which Burrito's principle says it will, when something happens, then that's where fear starts to set in. And people, when they have fear, they sometimes overreact and they do different things. In this particular case with Trillburger, it sounds like to me that if money was being siphoned out of the company for exterior usage, that there was a problem with their accounting system. There was a problem with how they showed accountability to the company. And so you should be aware, you know, where your money is going. If you're not, then you're just subject to whatever may happen. even as we open our restaurant, we love our staff. We'll definitely care for our staff, but we're going to have cameras. We're going to have accountability systems that will help us know that, you know what? We're missing a case of shrimp. Let's check the cameras. Why? How do you do that? You have a system of inventory. So vetting the partner would be knowing the partner, knowing what they bring to the table, having an operating agreement where each person's lines of responsibility and the hierarchy of authority is placed. So for example, with my wife and I, is that I have the final say because I'm the CEO, but it doesn't mean that I'm not going to listen to her ideas. On the other hand, she's a CMO, chief marketing officer. You know, if she says, I'm thinking we could go in this direction and it makes sense to me, we're going to go in that direction. But ultimately, over the entire company, I have the final say for what happens, how the company is steered and what direction it's going in. So yeah, having a legal team, separate legal team for each partnership or partner is very important, and it may cost a little bit up front, but it'll pay dividends in the end. What do you think?
Yes, I agree. It's important to have the right parties involved, the right system of checks and balances to make sure that everybody is doing their job, that they are taking care of business appropriately and honestly. Having a legal team will certainly help ensure that. Yes, I agree that it's probably safer to go the route of running a sole proprietorship instead of having partners, because things do get really messy when partners become involved, and especially when you have more than one partner. If it goes beyond just two people running a business, then that's where you really need to have a stronger sense of checks and balances. Because let's reiterate what happened with Trailburger. So the Vivaris family was entrusted to handle the money that was coming into the business. And it seems like that at first they were very transparent, but over time they started becoming less open about it. They weren't really disclosing where the money was going to. And the other partners didn't find out that they were misappropriating funds by using them for their other business until Andy Nguyen had that conversation with Patsy Vivaris, admitting that they had used $45,000 of Trailburger's proceeds from the rodeo to help save Sticky's Chicken from getting evicted. A cherry on top of that is the fact that Bun B and the rest of his associates want access to these bank accounts based on the news article I read. So that implies right there that when they started working with the Vivarises, they never had access to the company's bank accounts to begin with. They just put sole control over the accounting with them, and they never even had any access to the bank accounts to begin with. So that creates a rather, no pun intended, sticky situation. So how can joint owners of a restaurant, or any business type for that matter, avoid a problem like this?
One thing that they can do is for certain levels of cash withdrawals or certain allocations of funds, they have to go through an approval process, and everyone that's involved in the ownership has to sign off on it. That's one way they could do that. If it's, say, the threshold is $500, for example, anything over $500 would require partner signatures. So if you're going to siphon money out of the business, you can only do it anything under $500, and you have to do it repeatedly if you want to get any amount of money. All of those things could be drawn up into the operating agreements. Obviously, you know, there are going to be times when expenses have to be made on larger than $500, and I'm just using $500 as an example, but whatever makes sense for that company and their expenses and what they spend their money on. I don't know whether they had, you know, corporate meetings where there was a budget and the budget was, you know, discussed. And another thing is like, even like anytime my wife spends the money out of our account, I get a text message, you know, that says what happened. And so that's accountability between us both. And so that there's so many things you could do today, technology wise, that for that to have happened and gone unnoticed, it is probably someone who is sort of not having taken care of their business enough to have the right amount of oversight. And that's only speculation. But for that to happen, you would have to say there was like a complacency there as far as, you know, accountability is concerned. Because you see, in the restaurant business, again, we're chasing pennies. So if I, you know, do $20,000 in a week or so, if I bring in, you know, net profit 15% of that, I'm pretty much doing on par with the rest of the industry. And then, but what is that? You know, $20,000 looks like a lot of money in an account before you start paying all the bills, before you have to pay the food purveyor, before you have to pay the liquor company, before you have to pay the staff and all those other things that happened there. So sometimes people look at cash flow and say, "Ooh, I'm doing well. Let me just tap into this a little bit here and there. Nobody will notice." But then typically the rooster comes home to crow when that happens, when all of a sudden now you can't pay your bills. You wonder where all the cash went. So yeah, I would say that, you know, and oftentimes, you know, celebrities will be passive in their involvement in the company. Not a bad thing. They're using their name to bring in the business. But at the same time, they should have some measures involved in how they can get an overview of how the money is being spent. Because the money and the cash flow in the restaurant business is paramount to being able to stay in business, amongst other things, but money is very important.
Yes, I agree. I would say, additionally, to avoid a problem like this, you should hire a trustworthy accounting firm. That way, none of the partners are involved in overseeing the financial matters, and that all the bookkeeping, the accounting is all done externally by a third party.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do also agree with that. Typically, so in our business, I have a bookkeeper who is less expensive than having an accounting firm. And then I have a CPA. In that situation, which is pretty much just two separate entities working as one, in that situation, there's still great opportunity to siphon money out of the business. Because an accounting firm doesn't do anything other than take account of what you do in your books. So imagine an accounting firm is just like a QuickBooks system. You go out and you spend $5,000 on food and then maybe $2,000 on liquor. And then you send $10,000 on payroll. And maybe you take a trip, a business trip. You know, all those receipts are just plugged into the accounting system. And no one in the accounting program or the accounting company is actually saying, "Wait a minute, hold on, you know, you spent too much," or you know, what will happen is, and what we did every month is that we had a accounting for what happened that month. And we went over P&L statements and cash flow statements to see where we were with the margins. Was food cost high? Was labor cost low? Or whatever. Basically, the key parts of the financial statement that are key items that we need to look at. You know, we have to look at food costs. We have to look at labor costs. And now I'm even adding another one where I call it the tech stack, which is so much technology is involved now in the restaurant business. That can be quite a cost that, you know, you want to keep track of. And so, you know, the accounting firm is not going to play watchdog. They're just going to give you the information that you need to do to make your good business decisions. So I still say that it's an internal thing that has to be agreed upon with the partners, has to be systematic. If you really want to make the business work, and if you really want to be successful, and you really have respect for all your partners, and your motives are correct, you're going to submit to any check and balance that will help you not run into problems down the line. My wife and I, for example, you know, we have a lot of checks and balances where we know when money is being spent. And we've had certain agreements where, okay, you know what? This is our grocery budget for the month. When it's done, we don't go out and add more to it. In the business, we have an operating agreement. She's marketing, I'm operations, I'm going to be handling human resources, she's going to be handling finances. And the reason why that works is because we have been partners for so long. That's why, you know, if you just go, you know, out to drinks with somebody and you say, "Hey, let's partner up," those days are gone. You know, that back in the day when you would meet up with somebody that you thought could help you get where you want to go, and you write a business plan on a napkin, and next thing you know, you just go for it. These days, we don't have that type of trustworthiness and that kind of transparency. We can hide in plain sight and do whatever we want to do. And a lot of times, there's very few consequences. And unfortunately, the courts are full of this type of litigation. And I'm sorry that it happened in the business that I love so much.
Yes, unfortunately, this is not an uncommon occurrence. This happens all the time in the business world. And it just really depends on picking your partners wisely, really. If you are going to go the route of a partnership, even though we don't recommend it, at least make sure that your partners have integrity and make sure that you know that they have a clean past. They don't have any criminal background. They haven't been involved in criminal activity or done anything questionable or shady in the past. So yes, integrity and honesty are important in anybody involved in making any business matters, especially if your partner's in the business. Now, let's talk more about what the Vivara siblings are accusing Bun B and his partners of doing. I mentioned this in the summary earlier, but let's reiterate it again. They are suing Bun B and all of his partners. They're claiming that Bun is trying to hoodwink them by stealing their recipe, by proclaiming the OG Trill Burger as his own. They're accusing him of stealing credit for the recipe. However, they say that Andy Nguyen, who is one of the partners in the business, invented this recipe for Sticky's Chicken. They're saying that he invented it and that Bun B put no blood, sweat, or tears into making this recipe. So they are countersuing him for the rights to the recipe, and they're also accusing the other three partners of trying to force them out of the business over the theft of the funds. So in a restaurant that has multiple owners, how should proprietary recipes be handled in a matter like this? So when you have multiple owners of a restaurant, who at that point really owns the recipe or the rights to the recipe?
So having the rights to a specific recipe, whether it be like trademark, or I think in the recipe world, it's more called like a copyright or something to that effect, is very difficult to prove in a court. Somebody can change one ingredient in a recipe and it no longer is your recipe. I think that if the recipe was, you know, a key ingredient to the success of this business, then ownership should have been established from the beginning, and the process, you know, went through to say that, you know, like for example, like Colonel Sanders has the spice recipe. I think it's like so many different ingredients, and he guards that recipe real closely. I am not a patent attorney or have a lot of experience. I remember one time I had this recipe because all of my recipes have been original as well, but there's one that I really felt I needed to protect. And so somebody said, hey, if you take your recipe, put it in an envelope and mail it to yourself and don't open it, then you have, in fact, a patent that's government approved because the U.S. Post Office has stamped it. Now, I hear that that's more difficult to prove this day. So I can't really talk legally about what one can do to actually keep the rights to themselves of a specific recipe, other than talk to a patent attorney or a copyright attorney or go through the process to get it protected. But I will say that if you really want to use that recipe or something really close, you know, you could just like change an ingredient and then go on about your business and make money. Now, is the recipe or is it the name that is really what people are attracted to? That's another question. I mentioned earlier that I had a bad experience with a landlord. Well, the landlord promised to sell me the whole building lock, stock, and barrel, which probably back in that time would have been worth maybe $5 or $6 million. It had like 4 or 5 storefronts in it. It was in a really suburban, high-income neighborhood, and I had came into him with my clientele. He ran the bar, and I ran the restaurant. And the deal was that he can make money, all the liquor money went to him. And then at 2 years, he would sell me the whole building. Well, I just had a handshake. I didn't on paper. And when 2 years came, he became a huge antagonist, you know, just messing with me, my staff, doing crazy things. And he said, I'm not going to sell you the building. I never planned to. I have always had this flytrap type restaurant where young, talented chefs like yourself come in and they decide they want to open a restaurant here, and I let him do that, and I run him out of business after 2 years. And he said he did it 16 times before me. Now, in addition to that, he kept my sous chef, or hired my sous chef on to run the restaurant and use my recipes as if it was me. And I really didn't have a leg to stand on, unfortunately. And then sometimes a lot of those things will stay in court for so long, you're exhausting all your finances trying to fight it when you should really be doing business. So for whatever reason, this is it's a sticky, like you said, no pun intended, situation, but hopefully they'll iron it out. But I don't see that recipe as being something that should keep another restaurant from opening up and having something similar. It's done all the time.
The recipe in question at Trill Burgers actually involved a special secret sauce that was invented by Andy Nguyen, in addition to some spices they add to the hamburger patty. So at that point, there is something rather tangible in this recipe that nobody else has access to, I should say, because it's a sauce that he invented and they used some sort of spices. It could be everyday spices that anybody has access to. We don't know, but they're never going to openly tell us what spices are being used, as they consider that a secret. Now, the sauce, on the other hand, that is the portion of the recipe that is probably, in their eyes, you know, you could say that that sauce to them is what the Coca-Cola recipe is to Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I guess the question is, what did they do to protect that? If there's a lawsuit going on right now, there's a strong possibility that they didn't legally protect it. Do you know how Coke protected its recipe? That would be an interesting way, interesting thing to find out. But, you know, and then also, but if you look at like You know, Colonel Sanders has his secret spice recipe. Like you said, Coke, Pepsi, they have their different recipes. And a lot of these people, when you sign on to them as an employee or if you're anywhere involved in those recipes, then they will have you sign a non-compete clause, right? And so you can protect it with signatures like that. But again, I'm not well versed in those type of things. And I can tell you for certain, I have my own miracle seasonings. I have my Cajun tartar sauce. I have Cajun sour cream. I have a lot of different sauces. Now, when I start to get into the bottling and the packaging business, then I'll probably get more information on how to protect those things so that it is proprietary.
In any business, it's important to protect your intellectual property, and patents and trademarks are a big part of that. Recipes, a lot of these recipes we're talking about, like, for example, what we said about Coca-Cola, Colonel Sanders, 11 herbs and spices, these are all patented recipes that the public will never know and only their corporate owners will ever have access to. In the case of Trill Burgers, we don't really know what happened here. All we know is that, according to what I read on the news article, is that Patsy Vivaris has said that Andy Nguyen invented the recipe for the OG Trill Burger, and Bun B is simply trying to steal the credit for it. Now, I don't really find that statement believable, but I do believe that Andy Nguyen most likely is the man behind the recipe itself. It seems like that when all five of these people decided to go into business with each other, their partnership agreement did not outline what happens to the rights of the recipe. Because normally, in a case like this, when you have several parties coming together to form a joint venture, any intellectual property created by one of the parties surrenders their individual rights to the piece of information at hand, and then its ownership falls within the corporation that's being formed. So that means every individual party involved in owning the business is now considered to be part owner of said piece of proprietary information.
Yes, yes. You know, I'm looking up some information as well about, you know, recipe protection and so forth, but some of it confirms what I had mentioned, contractual agreements. One of the things here, it says, keep detailed records of the development process of your recipe, including any notes, sketches, and prototypes. This can help you establish your ownership of the recipe in the case of a dispute. So that was pretty interesting. And then it talks about copyright and patents as well. When it talks about copyright, though, it talks about the names more so than the actual ingredients. It's a tough market to try to copyright, but you can.
I would say whenever it comes to intellectual property, get an attorney to help outline all this for you if you're going to be getting yourselves involved in a partnership. If one person is the original author of a piece of information that you're going to be contributing towards this partnership you're getting into, have an attorney outline all the mechanics of how this is to be handled should the business get dissolved or there's some sort of internal dispute in general, because otherwise it's just going to be very messy. And it really seems like to me that at Trill Burgers, they didn't really have anything truly outlined in terms of the ownership of this burger recipe. That's why they're having this problem that they're having now, because they didn't truly outline what was to happen should a partner exit the agreement, or if the agreement just ends up dissolving altogether and they go out of business. So these are important things to consider when starting a partnership business and you have certain pieces of protected works involved. If you're the author of a certain piece that you're contributing to an overall new business venture, make sure that you have something outlined in your partnership agreement stating what happens to it in the event of a dispute or a dissolution of the business. You know, an example would be the rights of the recipe go back to the original owner upon dissolution of the agreement. Now, speaking of agreements, it was revealed that Bun B and the rest of his partners sent out a separation agreement to end their business relationship with the Vivarises after it was determined that they had stolen $45,000 from Trill Burgers. This agreement says that they have to surrender their ownership stakes back to the company, which means they'll be redistributed equally to the other three partners. They have not returned the agreement signed, and they have also not returned the stolen money either. So, when it comes time for a divorce, a business partner divorce, and the other partners refuse to cooperate with the agreement that's in place, how should this be handled? And I know that you've described your personal experience with something like this offhand, but how should this be handled? And if you have any other details of your experience that you'd like to share, please share them with us.
So it's sort of difficult to, just from what I've heard and read in the articles, to say how it should go, but how it should go is oftentimes how it will go. So in my situation, for all intents and purposes, I felt like it should have went in my favor because, one, I was the attraction. I was the one that opened doors, and the first day we opened our doors, we had to turn away 50 people at the door. So I thought I was the darling and the sweetheart of the deal. So why would you mess with your cash cow? And so while that is evidently true, or was evidently true, what my landlord had in mind was, I'm going to retire now that I've made all of this money, and you're the last person that I have to do this to, because now I'm ready to retire. I'm going to Florida and play golf. So a lot of times the way things actually go depends on the intent of both parties and what they want or don't want out of a situation. He might have, if he wasn't and didn't make all the money he needed, he might have been acting a little bit differently. The other thing as well is, whoever has the best legal representation is typically going to be the one who wins. When I went to court, and this is how he got me evicted, I put in a $21,000 point of sale system, but I did not have enough room in the restaurant to put the brains of the computer. So I told him that, and he volunteered a room that was in the back of another storefront. So to get to it, I had to leave out the back of the restaurant and walk up into another storefront. Well, when it came time to getting me evicted, and he took me to court, when we got to court, he said, "Hello, Judge." And the judge said, "Hey, Frank, how are you, man? Love the work you're doing in the city." So right away, I'm thinking to myself, I'm not, he likes this guy. He knows this guy. He doesn't know me. So I'm already feeling behind the eight ball. And then the legal reason for evicting me and having me to take every bit of equipment and leave that location in 5 days was this. I did not have a certificate of occupancy for where my computer was being kept in this other storefront. I had a CFO for where the restaurant was, but I did not have a CFO for that place. Therefore, I am illegally in this place. And I had no choice. Now, my lawyer at the time didn't put up a big fight, and I was kicked out. At the time, I had a second restaurant, but it was 30 miles away, and it was just starting off. And it took a long time, another year, to build up that business. So if I was Solomon, I would say, give me the recipe, and I'll split it in half. And I'll say, you get this half, and you get that half. And the one who really, really owns the recipe will say, no, don't do it. Give it to him. That's kind of a joke. But so what really should happen, it doesn't typically happen. And it depends on what preparations, like you said, were made earlier on to have clauses and to have amendments and things that said, this is how we're going to handle disputes, which I'm very familiar with now because I'm building a restaurant and I have that same type of 51-page dispute handling document with my general contractor. So I hope that kind of helps out with the answer, but it's not exactly probably what everybody would want to hear.
Well, I must say that it was a very interesting story to share, though. And unfortunately, that had to happen. I'm sorry you had to go through that. The biggest thing that stood out to me, there's two things that really stood out to me there that I thought were just mind-blowing. The first part is that he allowed you to use that neighboring space for the computer system illegally. He should have told you up front that he can't do this to you unless you have a certificate of occupancy. Secondly, he takes you to court over this, even though he voluntarily allowed you to move into the space, and the case is being presided over by a judge that he's good buddies with. So you already know that that's a one-sided case right there. The whole thing just looks really fishy and shady.
Very, very shady. And when I first moved in there, the guy that delivers uniforms to the building said, "Do you know this guy?" And I said, "No, I just kind of met him recently. He decided to do business together." And he said, "Be careful. He's a snake in the grass." I'm like, really? He seems really nice. And he was for 2 years until it was time to get rid of me. And you know what? For the life of me, I'm like a closet attorney in some ways. But at that time, I didn't know. I was exhausted. I had a one-year-old child. I saw my dreams going up in smoke, and never did I feel so out of control of my own destiny. And so I didn't lawyer up in the way I would protect myself. Now, if I were my lawyer, I would say, "Judge, Mr. Frank was complicit in this illegality. Is that the right word? He was complicit in that. So therefore, if Michael has to leave, he has to leave. Or I'm suggesting an amendment and giving him time to get the certificate of occupancy so that he can continue business. I mean, the fact that the judge could not see exactly what was going on, and maybe he already knew how he was going to rule because they might have talked earlier on or whatever. It was a good old boys town. But yeah, it was shady. And when it comes to money, that's why we're talking about this right now. We're talking about, you know, partnerships. It gets real ugly when money starts to come in the door and people, their egos go up high. And so sometimes, you know, especially, God forbid, they start to do really, really well. And then some folks decide they're going to go out and start living a higher life and buying cars and doing all these things. And there's suspicion there. So the idea here is to be cautious, is to not enter into agreements quickly, to not enter them without attorneys or reviewing it. I just read a book called Love is Free, Guac is Extra. It's by the former CEO of Chipotle, who was an attorney, a trial lawyer, and became friends with Steve Ells, who was the CEO at the time. And then eventually Steve Ells stepped down and brought him in as CEO of the company. He was CEO for about 12 years. But, you know, one of the things that I took away from that is that the best partner you can possibly have in the restaurant business is someone who's an attorney that's legal, especially real estate attorneys. He specialized in being a real estate attorney. And so he was able to negotiate leases. And even as, you know, John Burritos gets, you know, their foot in the ground and we want to expand, some places will lease, some places will purchase. I'm just happy that this particular place that we're purchasing now is a land ownership, and I do not have a landlord, and my own company will be my landlord. So, but it's not to say, because I spoke with Russell Ybarra, the owner of Gringo's and Chimichanga's. He's a 27-28 restaurant owner, probably has over 2,800 employees. And I asked him, I said, you know, so what's the best thing to do? To own the land, to own the dirt, or to rent it? He says, it depends. If you can get a ground lease that's 20 years and you can get, you know what you're going to pay. If you're in a location that has high traffic, a ground lease makes sense. And ground leases are such where you can build and do whatever you want on that land. You don't have to have the landlord's permission. So I will consider regular leases in the future. But right now, the first one, I just want to have my own, be my own landlord.
That's what I like about you, Michael. You're always good at getting all of your ducks in a row. You look at every single little aspect of what needs to be done. You just want to make sure that you get what's best for Jam Burritos as it prepares for its big launch coming later this year. And see, I know that you would never get yourself involved in any problems similar to what we've been talking about today. You've learned quite a bit from over the years. Even though these can be quite impactful, they're still learning experiences. The most important thing is to never just trust anybody, especially people that you barely know. And unfortunately, that was the case with your landlord, with your previous restaurant. He really was a snake in the grass, and it's just important to be careful. We've been talking a lot about different examples. We've been mentioning a lot of examples of these snakes in the grass throughout this whole episode. But we have one more question I'd like to ask you. In general, partnerships can be very dangerous and risky, as we've seen in the various examples that we've discussed today. So if someone decides they want to start a restaurant with other owners, what tips do you have for them to help them ensure that a situation like yours does not happen, or a situation like what's going on with Trill Burgers does not happen?
Yes, it is risky. It is dangerous. I think that really what's important is not being over anxious and taking the time to plan. When you start with a business plan, in the business plan to determine what are the capital requirements to run this business, this restaurant, successfully. In some cases, that can be human capital. It could be financial capital. And then who are the right persons to fit that bill? I would also just go back to, you know, creating fail safes and guardrails that will help people not go off of the rails. Sometimes people, by human nature, like I said, when they start seeing money and they start seeing, you know, the prestige, owning a restaurant can be pretty prestigious, you know. Okay, let me invite my buddy, my golf buddies in here. so they can see what of a big shot I am. And people often think that restaurant owners are just, you know, swimming in dough, and it's such an easy, great business, but it is not. It's a very difficult business. So the planning process, I think, and the biggest tip I would say is make sure you have legal representation, each partner. Make sure that you're in agreement with the hierarchy of the business, who is going to be CEO, who's going to be the various positions in the company, what their roles and responsibilities will be. And don't really start serving food until you know this. Don't think we'll get to it or whatever, because once the business opens up, you're going to be consumed and overwhelmed with taking care of the guests. So make sure this blueprint is laid out ahead of time. And let the people that are experts in the field that they're experts in manage this area, but always have a lot of communication is very, very important. You know, meetings, executive meetings, where you take measurements of your goals and your objectives, and to make sure that you're on task with these different things, holding everybody accountable is very important. Utilizing technology to communicate. When you can't be there, you may have to have a Zoom meeting, or you may have to have some other ways of still making sure that the business is being pushed forward. The other thing I would say is, when it comes to the restaurant business, anyone and everyone that's involved in the business should love the business, should have an affinity towards the business. And this is why I'll say this. Like, let's say someone has money, right? And they have a skill in accounting, right? And so they're going to be putting in money, and they're going to put in the accounting skills. But if they don't love the business, then they're going to look at what you do as trivial, and they're not going to be able to identify, let's say you are the general manager or you are the chief operating officer. They're not going to be able to relate to what you do, what you have to go through, to be sympathetic so that they can do the very best job that they can do to make sure that you get what you need. You know, my wife and I, I'll say this, we're getting to a point right now where we understand these things. And so I will say, okay, we need to, you're financial, you know, you're handling the money. So, but to meet this objective, you know, I need XYZ amount of money, and then we'll talk about it. But if she didn't understand the whole business and care for and love the whole business, she might not be sympathetic. Another thing that she does is that she's our chief marketing officer, and there's a constant battle between marketing and operations, because marketing will say, come on in, I'm going to give you all this stuff and you're going to really enjoy it. And then the people come in and they say, so I hear that you have this thing going on, I want to try it. And then the operations staff says, what are you talking about? I don't know this. I don't know anything about it. That's a gap. So we've decided, okay, you know what? We will understand that gap. And so what we're going to do is, in our marketing, we'll work hand in hand with operations so that there's training going on. If we have a special promotion, everybody is up to speed on it. Everybody is buying into it. And therefore, we can now work cohesively to get that ROI, that return on investment. So it's just a lot of planning. It's a lot of dotting your I's, crossing your T's, keeping accountability. If a person doesn't want to be accountable from the start, they're not good partners. You have to discern that. You have to decide. You put it to the test, you know. Start with little things and then go with your gut feeling. And your gut is typically going to be the right thing to do, even though it may seem like it's a setback, but it's basically a setup for success. If you have the right people on the bus, be it a partner, be it employees, be it vendors, be it third party, anything like that, it is important that everyone is sort of marching to the same beat. I try not to hire any outside vendor that doesn't love the business, that doesn't love what they do, doesn't care about people as much as possible. And sometimes you got to go through a few frogs before you find the right prince or princess. With that, that's a wrap.
And what a wrap it was. You summed it up perfectly, Michael. The way you described it, you've got to have passion. You've got to make sure that you hire accountable people. Never just jump into something without knowing what you're doing. Always make sure that you have your legal agreements in place. Everybody knows what their role is. And of course, that everybody is on the same page about everything. And of course, if you make a major mistake, be accountable and own up to it. That's how a business operates. You've got to make sure that everything is in line, in sync, and everybody knows what their vital role in the business is. That's very important. Thank you, Michael, for joining us once again. I hope that every business owner out there has taken some great notes from the this episode, if you're following the situation with Trillburgers, remember that all that spawned due to picking poor partners, you could say. Always make sure that you know who you're going into business with first before you decide to go into business with them. Thank you, Michael. I hope you have a great day. And do you have anything else you'd like to say before we close?
Yeah, I had a couple of thoughts, if you don't mind, I wanted to add. One of them is my role, although it'd be the CEO, I heard someone say something that I'm going to adopt as well, and it's the CIO, a CII, and that means Chief Information Officer. And so what that means is my role with the staff, with the executive team, with everybody, is to continually remind everyone of what we are doing, why we're doing it, and who we're doing it for. And so when I walk through the restaurant and I see a cashier, I'm going to congratulate her for helping us to give extreme hospitality. When I look for staff outside of the restaurant, I'm going to identify people who I see can join our team because they're already giving extreme hospitality. The other thing that I was going to mention was anything that you do that's worth doing is worth having a hierarchy and a systematic way of the team succeeding. And so I'm sorry, I'm going to digress a little bit here, but one of the other things that I took from my Christian foundation is that we're all part of one body, you know? And so if you're a dishwasher, you're still just as important as if you're the CEO. And so I'm going to probably put some visuals up like that in the restaurant so everybody can feel like they're part of the team. And again, I think that the real deal to this point, what happened with Trillburgers, if those systems were in place, then these litigations would be probably not happening or quickly resolved. Because like I know in the contracts that I have right now, I know what I got into. I know how to get out of them. I can't just do it any way I want to. I have to do it according to the signed document that I signed. Now, if I signed that document and didn't look it over well and so forth, then shame on me because I have to live by that document. And society operates on living by their word, living by what they put in writing. And this would probably be a good lesson for anybody to understand that when they put their John Hancock on something, that the due diligence should have been done ahead of time to figure out that this is something they can live with. And then if it is something they can live with, deal with it. And it's not the end of the world. You know, we all make mistakes. As you know, I've shared with mine, it's not the end of the world. You learn from it and you get up, dust yourself off and go about your business. This side of the grave, you can do it again. You can start all over.
Very well said. Unfortunately, this is a very costly learning experience, but for all parties involved, let's hope that they've all learned their lesson appropriately and will know how to act next time should they decide to seek other business ventures. It's really important to make sure that you do your due diligence and you know exactly who you are getting into business with. Otherwise, you may end up regretting it later.
Absolutely.
Well, with that being said, Michael, all of your insight was very useful. I hope that many business professionals in general, not just the food industry, but business professionals in general, all take this information to heart because in general, it applies to pretty much any business. You've got to have individuals who are passionate. They know what their role is in the company and that they're good at what they do. You know, they're experts in their field. So thank you once again, Michael, for joining us on BizCast. I look forward to having you again on future episodes and you have a great day.
You too, Christian. Take care.